Thanks, everybody, for listening to The Shore Thing today. It is January 3rd, 2022. Warren and Ryan here with you. First episode of the new year, obviously. So do you think when Chris Berman comes on today, he'll be the last to wish you a happy new year?
He's got to be. Usually he's the first. Now he's got to be the last.
He could do both, yeah. So yeah. He'll probably wish us a happy MLK Day. Be the first to do that, get 2 weeks out ahead of that. You can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app. As well, today we will talk about college football playoff semifinals and some of the college football talking points from the weekend. Also, the NFL, 1 week to go, minus one more game as we head into the playoffs. A little bit more clear of the playoff picture, so we will talk about that as well. Ryan, how was your New Year's?
It was good. Just celebrated, obviously, at home with Jamie. We went through a little bit of a fiasco. I mean, not fiasco, but just, you know, obviously New Year's Eve is real popular. Everyone likes to go out. Everyone likes to do their own thing. So about a week and a half ago, like the week of Christmas, we tried to make a reservation at a nice restaurant for New Year's Eve. They were all booked up. So the second choice was to just order some takeout and bring it back home and chill, you know, do the kind of low-key thing. And so I get to the place where I'm going to place the order. Restaurant's dead. Nobody in sight. I'm like, all right, perfect. I belly up to the bar to grab a beer while I wait for the to-go order. And I put I give the guy my order. And he comes back like, I don't know, a minute or two later. And he's like, hey, the wait for that to-go food is going to be about 2 hours. Is that okay? Huh. I was like, 2 hours? He's like, yeah, they're a little backed up in the kitchen. I was like, I'd say so. I said, buddy, did you already put the order in? He's like, no, I want to make sure that the wait was okay first. I'm like, absolutely, it's not okay. You know, I didn't say that, but I was like, no, I'm good, man. I'll just pay for my beer and I'll head out. But I was just shocked at a 2 hour wait time to go. Like I said, I know everyone kind of probably was doing the similar thing, but I was shocked because it's not a super popular restaurant. It's one that's, you know, I thought was a little low key. So we had to call an audible, went to one other spot, and where it was able to pick up some food and bring it back home. But we were in bed, passed out by about 12:45. So it was a good night.
Yeah, I will say a lot. Look, I think the tide is turning a little bit on New Year's.
Well, because you're getting older.
Well, yeah, but still, I still feel like if you're still some people in their early 30s or late 20s still like to go out. But oh, I don't
sure.
know.
Uh-huh. For sure.
But I'll tell you, all of my friends, it was where nobody really wants to do anything. I went over to a party. One of my friends said, hey, we're having a party if you want to come over. And they're like, we're kicking everybody out at 12:15, 12:30. I go, that sounds like my type of place.
Absolutely.
But I went somewhere else. But the problem there is, I don't know if it was really a problem, but I bet a lot of people ran into this case, is that if they were streaming on television,
yes,
and you know what streaming streaming leads to?
Delays. Yeah,
a nice minute delay, a nice minute and 10-second delay. So they were at this party. There was like, they had a nice backyard, and the TV was outside, and everyone's like, "What time is it?" And I was like, and early on, I said, "Hey, you're on like a delay. Like, I don't even know if you really care about this, but like, midnight's gonna happen like a minute before, like." It says it on the TV and everything. And some guy looks at his phone with like the minute to go and he goes, dude, it's already midnight out here. And I was just like, yeah, we're on a delay on the TV, idiot. Just go and fireworks are going off in like the neighborhood or whatever. And everyone's like, what's going on? It's not midnight. And I was like, oh my God. So that was, I just thought that was pretty funny that I saw that coming a mile away early on. And then, it happened right there. So the streaming people, you get to celebrate it an hour, or not an hour, a minute later.
Yeah, the exact same thing happened to us because we stream and we're watching the countdown or whatever. And then literally, I mean, it dawns on me, like it's kind of like the same thing that happened to your guy. Like it dawned on me. I was like, wait, we're going to have a delay. And as I look at my phone, it switches to 12 o'clock. And I was like, I looked to Jamie and said, hey, it's 12 o'clock. And she goes, well, let's just wait for the countdown on the TV. I was like, all right, that's fair. Like, whatever. But yeah, it was, like I said, the last possible second it could have is when it hit me that, oh shit, we're going to have a little bit of a slowdown here. And same thing. I mean, living in the country, we had fireworks going off. I mean, probably starting at 6 p.m. And they did not stop. Luckily, my dog really doesn't care about them. The kid sleeps through all the noise perfectly fine. Jamie and I didn't have any problem sleeping, but our Facebook neighborhood page was blowing up with people. And it was like, buddy, I mean, what do you expect? And so that was quite the do to do, but it was fun. We went outside, watched a ton of fireworks in the backyard. We went out in the front yard a little bit. It was nice.
I forgot to mention this, but you almost JPP'd yourself on Christmas.
I did almost JPP myself on Christmas. We had some bottle rockets and some Roman candles that honestly, I don't even know how old they are. My brother was like, because I meant to stop on the way over to my parents' house and get some. And my one brother was like, Drew, he was like, hey, I still have some fireworks that you left behind, which if he means left behind when I moved out, that was like 5 years ago. So I don't know. Like, I don't know how old those were. And the first couple went off, no problem. And then the last one, there was a little bit of a delay and a misfire on the Roman candle. And so it blew up probably about, I don't know, a foot away from my head. And then the next one was a quick fire right after that. So yeah, it was a close call on Christmas as well. Yeah, we almost got the JPP working there. That would have been quite the Christmas present.
That would have been bad.
would have been pretty, pretty bad.
That would have been pretty, pretty bad.
The other issue we ran into real quick, not to cut you off, is we had the bottle rockets and I had it set up in an empty beer bottle. Well, I don't know. This was Christmas Eve. The wind was howling. And it so was. the bottle was swaying back and forth. And right as I was about to light one, it knocked over. And so I was like, oh, thank God we didn't get the fuse lit on that one, or else that one would have been shot directly at my family behind me. So that was another bullet we dodged quite literally. But so we, lived life on the edge a little bit, but it all turned out well.
Someone I saw on Twitter said that I can't believe people are shooting guns off on. I don't understand why people shoot guns off on New Year's Eve, especially with ammo prices the way they are right now. I obviously don't know. I guess ammo is pretty high. I didn't know that, but I thought that was a funny tweet.
Yeah, no, it there was another funny one I saw. Somebody had posted, was like, it was like a post in a neighborhood Facebook group, and somebody was like, hey, was that gunshots or fireworks that I just heard? And a guy commented on it and said, oh, sorry, that was me shooting my gun at the fireworks, which I thought was pretty good.
I thought he would have said, does it matter which one was which?
Yeah, exactly.
No, that was hopefully everybody had a good time out there. All right, let's touch on the NFL, then we'll get to college football and the playoff semifinals and that from the weekend. So the NFL, it looks like that the Cowboys have not solved the offense, as I was a little skeptical of. They just played a poor Washington team the week before that was coming off of a lot of COVID cases, and things are back to where they were before that game. So everybody got ahead of themselves. Kyler continues to dominate at AT&T Stadium as he goes 8-0, and if the Cardinals, if things hold, this will be a rematch in the first round right now of the playoffs, because the Cowboys would be the 4 and the Cardinals would be the 5 seed. And that would be a pretty tasty matchup there. Probably, I would say, obviously, the Cardinals are the best team of the wild cards that are going to make it. But the Cowboys put themselves in a little bit of a hole yesterday, obviously, and things look the same. And everyone, I mean, to me, there's not a lot of complaining about the whole fumble fiasco at the end of how the refs missed that, because it is pretty amazing that Chase Edmonds was able to like not have his knee touch the ground, like where he contorted his, how he contorted his body to stay up there. Like it pretty looked pretty obvious that his knee was down, but in the obviously the replay showed that the ball was out and they would have gotten it. But you know what? That's what happens. McCarthy didn't have any timeouts left. And even on the broadcast, they were like, oh, if he didn't use this timeout on the 2-point conversion, he would have had a timeout there to challenge. I don't think you really know that, because he could have started using his timeouts earlier in that drive to preserve a little bit more clock. So I think that's being a little bit nitpicky there. They didn't get a break. And that's what happens in the NFL. It's tough luck.
Yeah, big time tough luck. You know, like you said, those things will, you know, they talk about turnover luck quite a bit. And that's one of the cases right there. I'm trying to think. It might be the Cardinals as well. I think it's an NFC West team.
The Cardinals, but the Packers are getting a lot of fumbles back.
Where there's the Packers, they fumbled six times and they've recovered all six.
Yeah, it's the Packers.
It's the Packers. So, you know, things like that, you know, turnover luck, that can decide a game one way or the other, or you know, kind of further solidify a game. But, you know, we both going into this game, both you and I were a little skeptical and wondering, you know, how are the Cowboys going to respond when they play a good team? Because on this you know, last three games, they went Washington, the Giants, and Washington again, which Washington just, you know, like you said, coming off COVID cases, injuries, just kind of all sorts of turmoil. The Giants just straight up stink. You and I both had more passing yards than the Giants' entire team did yesterday. Yeah. So, you know, this was kind of what the big question was, and I think it was answered a bit, of when the Cowboys play another good team, how are they going to look? The defense wasn't terrible. Diggs got burned by A.J. Green early in the game, which he's, you know, susceptible to do, or, you know, for it to happen, you know, from time to time. But the Cardinals just came out with a good game plan. They got pressure on Dak. They forced him into some bad throws. Obviously, losing Michael Gallup for the rest of the season now, the torn ACL, we'll see when he comes back next year, is a huge blow to this Cowboys offense. Say again?
If he comes back next year.
Yeah, if he comes back. I just, you know, nowadays with the guys, their ACL and, you know, all the medical wonders that we see guys come back 8-10 months after, you know, we'll see if he does come back
to the Cowboys next year, because he's a freak. Not if he comes back to play. I mean, yeah, I think he's going to play, but be on
the team. Yeah, sure. I got you. So obviously that's going to be a huge blow to the offense, you know, losing a weapon like that. But, you know, the Cardinals got out early, you know, we're driving, moving the ball pretty easy. And the Cowboys, I don't feel like we're ever really fully in control of this game. You know, it looked like they were going to, you know, come back, or even when they had a lead at some point, they it didn't ever feel like, hey, you know, I don't think they had a lead at any point. I think the Cardinals led wire to wire. So even when they made it close, like I said, I never really felt like the Cowboys, or the Cardinals, I should say, were ever in danger of losing this lead and giving things up.
Yeah. And it's, like the whole, these Trayvon Diggs, he's obviously, everybody has been just praising him this year for, oh man, he's got 11 interceptions right now. He's been so, so good. He's also given up 1,000 yards receiving. Yeah. So like, I would probably say I would like to, hey, if he can pick off like 5 passes a year, and we can cut those yards down like in half to about 500 yards, I think I would make that trade in a heartbeat. Like, yeah, Trayvon Diggs is a great player, but right now he's like the ultimate boomer bust guy. Like, I mean, they just pointed out he totally bit on the double move. And if Kyler throws a better pass, that's a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Like, he underthrew it, so he wouldn't overthrow him and look like a fool out there. But that's what you get with Trayvon Diggs. Like, he's going to get burned. He got burned later in the game too, I think. Mm-hmm. But like, that's what you're going to do. That's what you're getting with him. Like, you hope he can make the interception, but he's going to be susceptible to a lot of big plays. In the negative way, I thought like the defensive line played well. Randy Gregory, he's been great, and they're going to have to see if they're going to be able to keep him, sign him to a deal next year. Like, they really do have an active defensive line. They got four QB hits yesterday, which I thought was pretty good. Only one sack, but I would say it's still pretty hard to sack Kyler. It just seemed like yesterday, what to me really isn't a lot on the defense. Yeah, at the end, they I hate saying like you have the momentum in your way, blah blah blah, this and that, but like, you had things, you had a lot of energy, and then you need to get a stop to get the ball back, and then Cliff called a great final drive, but they just run it right down your throats, and you could say you did get a fumble, but you didn't, because the refs didn't say it was a fumble. They could have made a stop, and they didn't, to get the offense the ball back. There was still like 4.5 minutes left in the game. So it's like, when you need a big stop, you didn't get it. But overall, I thought they played pretty well. I just think, again, this goes to like the offense, of the inconsistencies of the offense. And I don't know. I don't even like know what it is. I'll give Kellen more credit. Like, I know they were down a lot, so they were going to abandon the run, but the run really wasn't working at all yesterday, no matter who was running. I know Pollard only got 3 carries, but they were again averaging 2.5 yards a carry. I like that they called some runs for Dak to change that up a little bit, but they were trying to work Dalton Schultz, and him and Cedric Wilson were the team leading receivers, but they really didn't have any explosive plays really under that, other than that Michael Gallup other than the Cedric Wilson throw to Tony Pollard and then the Gallup touchdown, it was hard for them to work the ball down the field yesterday. They weren't getting those big plays. Amari Cooper, he had 7 targets, but only pretty much 2 or 3 had 3 catches. Those were like the only catchable ones. Dak missed him high, missed him low. Like I really feel like they need to make a more concerted effort to get Cooper the ball more, because look against Washington. I know Washington was struggling, but like, look at when Cooper was a more focal point of the passing game. It sets up things for everybody else. It just, I don't know, something's different. Something definitely things are still the same as they were 2 weeks ago. And I think we could definitely throw out the Washington game as something that turned the corner. As we both said, we were a little skeptical on that. But things are going to have to be answered, as this week they play the Eagles. I don't understand why ESPN or the NFL put that game on Saturday night. That doesn't mean anything. I thought they were trying to go for like high profile games, but I guess that's going to be a ratings bonanza on Saturday night. But for playoff implication, it doesn't mean anything. I'll have to see what they do against the Eagles. Do the defense is getting a little bit better? Do they rest Dak? Who do they rest this week? There's still a lot of questions. I'm almost saying, I know I would say I would rest Dak, but I'm ready to say the offense needs to play and get some reps to see if they could figure things out.
100% agree. You know, there's always the age old question that everyone always talks about the last week, the NFL rest versus rust, you know, when you're going into the playoffs, but you've got to see some kind of improvement, some kind of positive tilt one way or the other when it comes to Dak and that offense, and, you know, losing a guy like Gallup. Dalton Schultz is, I don't even know if it's sneaky. He's sneaky been a weapon. He's just been a weapon all year for the Cowboys and for Dak. And like you said, that running game just really did not help. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Tony Pollard used split out wide a little bit more. Cedric Wilson, like you said, had a decent game, 6 catches on 6 targets. But they've got to find something that works and something that can really get this offense going. One thing I meant to mention earlier when we first started talking about it, getting first downs on third downs. The Cowboys were 3 for 11 on third down tries. And so when you're not able to extend drives like that, and, you know, you're whiffing over and over and over again. And I don't remember exactly how many were, you know, third and long, but still, you know, you got to at least make it third and manageable. You know, maybe if you have a short fourth down, they went for it 3 times and got it all 3 times, but still, you know, missing 8 times when you can extend a drive, that's going to be huge, especially if you face this Cardinals team again. And if you're giving the Cardinals, you know, the ball that many times, they're going to hurt you. Kyler's going to hurt you offensively. You know, that running game has been good, whether it's been Chase Edmonds as of late. He's come on a lot better as of late with James Conner being out. But when you're giving a good team that ball that many times, you know, it's going to be hard to catch up or hard to take a lead. So you got to find something, some kind of rhythm going into the playoffs, or else it's just going to kind of be a replay of this. You know, I fear for the Cowboys and for the Cowboys fans going into the first week of the playoffs.
And I heard when I can't remember where I heard this, if it was Troy Aikman that said it, or I heard it on the radio this week driving around or something, but the Cowboys on 3rd and 7 or longer are like the second worst team at converting in the NFL at like a 15% rate. Like, brutal. They're if 3rd and 7 or more, you could pretty much just say, you know what, they're getting off the field. The defense is going to be getting off the field. They're not going to be able to convert. So that's another thing too. Like, and if I do give Kellen Moore credit yesterday, if you could tell the spots on the field on third down where if they called it where they were going to be in 4-down territory, so they would run it and they could get a couple yards, or hey, we're trying to just get 5 or 6 yards here, so then we could get 4th and 2 and then go for it on there. Like, that's smart coaching, and Dak knew the situation as well, so that's good on Dak. But there's only so many times where you're able to do that. Sometimes you got to take some shots on third down if you're not gonna be going for it. It's kind of, I think a lot of people are just spinning their wheels on wondering what it is. Like, I will say too, the Cardinals have like a really good defense. If there is, they got good pass rushers. Isaiah Simmons is coming into his own this year in his second year. Yeah. He's getting into a nice, he knows what his role is. Last year, I think they were kind of just with him. They didn't know what was going on with his role, trying to get him a defined role, but they figured out a nice one for him this year. But the Cardinals have a good solid defense. And so it's not like they're playing a bad defense where they're not scoring any points. Like, the Cardinals are a good team. I know, I would say most of the reasons why they've struggled recently was because of their offense. The Cardinals offense hasn't really been doing anything. And I know we talked about this last week, but they missed 7 points in the kicking game because Colt McCoy turned out to be the holder and Matt Prater didn't trust him for the first three kicks. So that's probably why they lost to the Colts. But I mean, we've been saying the same thing about the offense. It just doesn't really know what goes on. I like Dalton Schultz. He is a big part of the offense, but he probably shouldn't be getting 10 targets. I would prefer CeeDee Lamb to be getting around 10 targets. Cooper, he had 7 yesterday. Get him around 10. Like, there are other guys. Dalton Schultz, again, a nice piece. He gets 5 or 6 catches a game. Nice. But 10 targets, I think, is a little too much. He's not your dynamic playmaker out there. He's a very good tight end, but get it in the hands of your dynamic guys of Cooper and Lamb and see that. Even Cedric Wilson, like, he's a solid. I've been talking him up all year. I really like him. He's a solid number three guy. I know he caught a touchdown, but get something in space there. I don't know. Seems like we've been talking about the same thing when it comes to the offense the whole season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It has been. And so that's why you wonder, like, hey, you know, is there a fix? Can they make a fix? Can they make it quick? You know, quick enough to get things rolling in the right direction. I agree about Cedric Wilson. He's one of those guys, you know, I think Cordero Patterson might be a guy that's the next level of Cedric Wilson, but kind of a guy that you get the ball in his hands and see what he can do. You know, whether it's on a sweep, line him up in the backfield and handle the ball, or you know, screen plays, just something, get him, like you said, get him into open space. Washington's done a similar thing with this guy DeAndre Carter. You know, like I said, it's a guy, you know, we see Debo Samuel doing a lot of it, where just get this guy into open space and see what he can do with the ball. Again, I don't think that Cedric Wilson's quite to the level of a Debo or a Cordero Patterson, but use him in a similar way where he's just a weapon out there, and, you know, put the ball in his hands, let him cook and see what he can do. But you definitely need a little bit more explosive offense out of the Cowboys, especially if, you know, the defense isn't always going to be able to hold or be given up big plays as well. Something's got to be figured out rather quickly for these guys.
Yeah. And that's why I would say they should play him on, play them on Saturday against the Eagles. I really don't. I know I said this. I really am at a loss why the two Saturday games are Kansas City at Denver, which has no playoff implications unless the Titans lose on Sunday to the Texans. And then Dallas and Philly, like, they're trying to get big playoff matchups on Saturday. I don't understand why, like, Rams and 49ers isn't on there. The Rams win the division, and the 49ers, if they lose, they would have to wait it out for the Saints. Maybe, I guess, they want those games going at the same time on Sunday for a little more drama with Arizona, but I'd much rather watch the Rams and 49ers or National Alliance than any of those games. I don't understand what they're really doing with the Saturday games. I know they kind of lost a little bit of luster with some teams winning the division this week that they maybe didn't think were going to win the division, and it was out there and that, but I don't know. I'm a little surprised at the Saturday games, I guess. I didn't know what they were going to put out there, but I'm surprised it was that.
Yeah.
Elsewhere around the NFL, look, I think we got to start with Derek Carr.
Hey, he had a great game. He played really, really well. You know, like I said,
I know you went off the Derek Carr thing, but it was funny because, look, what does he do again? He leads him on another game-winning drive.
For a field goal. Yep, exactly. I thought that was perfectly scripted, you know, after what we had talked about on Thursday's game. You know, if Sam Ehlinger plays, maybe we get a different outcome. Who knows? Derek Carr played really well, led them down to, like you said, to a field goal to win it. And Dan Carlson bangs it through. But it was just a good game by the Raiders. There's not really much more to put. Carson Wentz, you know, he didn't play too bad. He kind of just kept doing what he's been doing all season, protects the ball, moves the ball down the field a little bit. And then just turns around and hands it off to Jonathan Taylor and lets him do his thing, really tries to stay out of the way, but good performance by the Raiders. Can't knock them or Derek Carr.
And now they're a win and in against the Chargers on Sunday Night Football. But no, the game of the day was definitely Cincinnati, Kansas City. And if you're Kansas City, you definitely got to be kicking yourselves for the offensive performance in the second half. Like, I know Burrow and Chase, were incredible, and Ja'Marr Chase had what 230 something yards receiving yesterday, 266 yesterday. Yeah. He was incredible. Burrow was just pretty much chucking it up to him and see what he would do. But for Kansas City to only score 3 points in the second half was definitely alarming, considering how with relative ease they moved the ball in the first half. No real resistance. They almost got a late field goal at the end there. Tyreek Hill dropped a pass, but the relative ease they missed, or they moved the ball in the first half to just really not being able to do anything is good for the Bengals defense. But if you're the Chiefs, you're trying to stay at home, get the one seed. You're up 14 at the half. I know they get the ball coming out, but that's a game you're really kicking yourself on how you blew it, and you're now going to have to go on the road potentially for the AFC Championship game. You don't get a bye probably now, so you're going to have to play that first round. Like, that's a game you really are going to be looking back on and kicking yourself there. And something is – the one thing about the Chiefs, their defense has been playing much better up until this last game. Also, they are just getting ridiculous flags called on them. I mean, the Bengals played great, but the refs were wearing a little orange and black yesterday, we'll say. The thing about the Chiefs' offense that has me a little worried, I know as I say that they put up 31 points, but you go look at Travis Kelce's stat line minus that Thursday night against the Chargers. Going back to the game against the Cowboys, or really since the month of December, the last four games, three of the four, he hasn't gotten more than 30 yards receiving, 27, 27, 191, and then 25. Like, he has been a big part of the offense, and teams have just been taking him out this year. Like, I'm surprised he's only had, I'm looking at it now, four games this season of 100 yards receiving. Like, normally he's one against Washington, he had 99, so that's close, but he's normally 80 receiving, 90 yards, huge part of their offense, getting 7-8 catches a game. Their teams are taking him out. Something is definitely up with him. And even Tyreek Hill hasn't been as explosive, hasn't been putting up those huge games as he has this year. So something with those two big playmakers, there is something up in Kansas City with them.
Yeah, you know, obviously a couple weeks ago, Travis Kelce has a big game and does the whole interview. Oh, I think I got my swagger back. It's shown that he really hasn't. But I agree, they haven't been as explosive as we've seen in the past. Even when they started off slow, you know, that was kind of the main knock against them, was that they just didn't have that big play ability that they've, you know, they have the ability. They just weren't either connecting on them or just weren't taking their shots early on in the season. And, you know, going back to your point of only scoring 3 points in the second half, it's not a case of this team packing it up, because they're not a team that'll just pack it up and call it a day. I feel like they try to go out there and score 100 points every game. So, you know, they just weren't able to get anything done against a very mediocre Bengals defense. You know, they have a couple dudes.
I don't think it's that mediocre. I think it's a solid defense.
I think they have some very solid dudes, but I wouldn't put them up there with some of the better defenses we see. I think they're outside of the top 10. So, you know, they're right in that middle ground, for at least in my mind. So
yeah,
you know,
no, I'm not saying they're a top 10 defense, but I think they're an average, average defense.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a team or a defense either, you know, anyway, that's the Chiefs can usually take advantage of and hit some of those big plays. And like you said, in the first half, it was with ease that they were putting up scores left and right. And that just somehow disappeared in the second half. And like you said, Chase and Burrow were locked in, and even Joe Burrow said it himself. He pulled out the meme and said, "F it, Ja'Marr Chase is down there somewhere," and he just chuck it up. And some of those catches that he would make are just unbelievable. The catch and runs that he made especially the catch and run was very Odell Beckham-esque, you know, shout out LSU, of, you know, catch the slant and then just outrun everybody on that 72 yard catch.
Four angles had.
Yeah, very bad angles. You know, that helps it, but very shocking to see the Chiefs kind of go down like that.
Well, and even Tyreek Hill has one touchdown since November 21st against the Cowboys, and that's also against the Chargers when he had 100 yards. But he's only had 300 yard games this year. Like, he's been taken out of it a little bit. I know some games he's had 11 catches, and he had a stretch where he had four games in a row where he had double digit catches. But he hasn't, like yesterday. Or no, sorry, I'm looking at targets. He's been under seven catches really, and all the way back to the Packers game on the 7th, except for one when he had 12. Like, he's they've just been taking those guys out of the game. I know they've still been winning a lot, but they got to figure something out there. What did you think about the ending of that game and what the Bengals did? Now, they got lucky that they got a questionable, I thought, hands to the face call. They had the offsetting penalties on that third and goal, or the third and one that let them run it down. The left guard clearly flinches, and the refs don't call it, so it would have been third and five and could have changed up what they would have done. But what did you think of the Bengals going for it at the end and getting lucky for what I think was probably a bad coaching decision? I'm not fully sure.
I think it was a bad coaching decision. After you miss it on the first go around, just go ahead and kick the field goal. The Chiefs didn't have any more timeouts. They're going to have to drive the length of the field have a decent drive just to even kick the field goal and tie it up. And I think they would have had right around, 58 seconds or something like that if they would have kicked the field goal. So it was a wild decision. They end up, like you said, getting lucky on the call and get a fourth down. Burrow goes out. And then Brandon Allen, I don't know what he was doing or what he was looking at, but he almost let that clock run all the way down before he snapped it on the spike. And Joe Mixon was even like, hey, bro, like, what are you doing? Like, let's get this thing cooking. And as soon as they snapped it and spiked it, Mixon rips his helmet off like, Jiminy Chris, what's this guy doing out here? Like, no wonder you're the backup.
If he would have let that go and it would have been a 10-second runoff, Mixon might have punched him in the face right on the field. He might have Jalen Ramsey him. Seriously. Like, that's not even a Joe Mixon punching joke. Like, seriously. We've had 2 weeks in a row of clashing of teammates' fights.
Yeah.
Like, he seriously probably would have threw hands.
I would not be surprised, because he was pissed. He was hot. He ripped that helmet off and was like, shaking his head, walking back to the sidelines. But I didn't know I forget who was on the call for that game.
It was Nance Romo.
Was it Nance Romo? Okay, yeah, because Romo was like, snap it. What is he doing? And he took that thing down to the last second and finally got off. But like I said, they were able to luck out of it and luck into a win. I thought Mixon had gotten in anyway when he had that little dump off. They called him short of the one, but to me it looked like he got in, but either way they were able to prevail.
Even there were offsetting penalties anyways.
Oh, that's right. That was the play. Those offsetting penalties.
Even if there wasn't a flag on the Chiefs, they would have got a holding call and then they would have kicked it.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how you go back out and then Burrow gets hurt and then he said he's good enough.
Yeah.
That could have been, obviously just got stepped on, it looked like, but what is going on? I mean, the fact Zach Taylor might win coach of the year, but I don't know if he's still a good coach. I don't know. He makes some questionable decisions there. At the same time, the Rams, Ravens game. I thought the Rams were my pick to win the Super Bowl and Stafford was my MVP pick, but good Lord, Stafford is hard to watch lately.
Bad.
He is in the first half, he was atrocious. And then starting out, he gets the fumble in the second half. But they came back to win. Shout out my boy Odell. What a game he had at the end there. But I don't really know what to make of the Rams. The Ravens, I'll tell you what. So Huntley is an exclusive rights free agent. So I guess the Ravens can sign him. But the Ravens maybe are in a little bit of a predicament here. You might disagree, but you probably know where I'm going here. They have to give Lamar a big-time contract. And, I mean, would you want Lamar? Would you want Tyler Huntley on your team? Tyler Huntley has looked pretty admirable as he's filled in lately the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to weigh your options there. I get what you're saying. Like, if you have Lamar, you're not going to let him go for nothing. If you're going to make a move, you obviously want to get some kind of compensation back. I don't think they make the move from Lamar to Tyler Huntley, but I'll tell you what, I'd like to see either one of those guys, across the way in the DMV and head over to DC. I mean, Tyler Huntley can throw the ball. He can spin it a lot better than Lamar, and he can make the play with his feet. So either one of them, I wouldn't mind taking on Washington, but yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to think long and hard about something like that, but you definitely, maybe ponder it a little bit, you know, do the little chin rub and kind of look up and say, do we make this move? But I don't think you just, Lamar is too dynamic of a player and makes, you know, some ridiculous plays, whether they're conventional or not. So, you know, I think Tyler Huntley is best served as a Ravens backup, but I mean, they'll probably get some calls on the guy for sure.
Oh no, for sure. There definitely are. And I do wonder that how much of him playing in like literally an identical system, like they don't have to change the offense at all when he's in there. They're pretty much a mirror. They're the Spider-Man meme of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So talk about getting a backup that has the same skill set as your starting quarterback. I think everybody looks for that. The Ravens have done that. So how successful would Huntley be somewhere else, I think, is up for question as well, because he's in a great situation there in Baltimore. But it's definitely going to be they're definitely going to get some trade calls going on. That is for sure. All right. What else from the weekend? I don't really know what else was. Oh, Antonio Brown yesterday.
Yeah.
What did you say?
The weekend.
The story of the weekend. Did you see the Ian Rappaport, what he said this morning happened?
Yeah. So apparently AB thought he wasn't healthy enough to play because of the ankle, and they tried to get him in, and he was like, no, I'm not going in. I'm not healthy enough. And so they said the offensive staff and Bruce Arians said, all right, well then you're done. Go to the locker room. And that's exactly what he did.
So that definitely makes things a little bit, that adds more context to the situation. Yeah. And I mean, look, I definitely, now I want to know where Rappaport's getting that from. Is he getting that from Antonio Brown's agent? I assume Drew Rosenhaus still. Is he getting that from the Bucs? Who is he getting that from? I would still like to know, but I mean, look, if you're the Bucs and you do that, that's kind of a bad move. I'm not saying I'm siding with AB probably, but if you do that and you say you're hurt or whatever, like that's pretty bad.
No, 100%. And I think that's something that the NFLPA should have to look into, you know, with, you know, if a guy says he can't go, well, then why are you going to force him in there? Yeah. And, you know, and I get it with AB, it's a little bit of a different situation because the guy has been, you know, whether it's mentally unstable, whether he is going through something, you know, that is serious mentally, or if he, you know, is actually injured and didn't feel like he could go play. And so it's a kind of a slippery slope here. And I think it should be kind of looked at a little bit closer. And like you said, depending on who the source is for Ian Rappaport's report, I think we'll have put a lot of context on the issue. But it's, you know, all around just a wild story, wild scene. You know, leave it to AB to make his exit just as tumultuous as his entrance was to Tampa Bay and his whole tenure there, really. You know, just a crazy, crazy scene of him ripping off his pads and his jersey and walking off into the sunset, walking off in the locker room, dancing.
While their offense is on the field.
It is just, I mean, could you imagine? Like, I've seen numerous videos of people that were in the end zone and everyone's kind of looking around like, what the hell is going on? What is it? Like, what happened? I saw a couple of videos of people watching the game at home. They're like, wait, did he get ejected? Like, what's going on here? And it was just crazy. It was funny too, because the reports that came out earlier, not even reports, just the what everyone was kind of assuming what happened was that he was real close to getting an incentive bonus for catches, and that the Bucs weren't letting him get in. They were telling him to stay out. And, you know, come to find out, allegedly, according to Ian Rappaport, it was quite the opposite.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I didn't even realize that he had a catches incentive bonus. I bet him yesterday to have like 8 catches or 9 catches at like plus 300. And then they're like, oh, he's got an incentive bonus. I was like, oh, okay. But also, did you see that one of the security people in the tunnel thought that he was a streaker?
Yeah.
That what happened there. It was pretty funny. The best video was the guy on the sideline who got the whole thing with the starting with the talk from Mike Evans.
Yeah.
That was the best one when Mike Evans tried to calm him down. But just a crazy thing. And then the picture of him outside of the wherever he was at. Was that outside the stadium? Did you see that one?
I think that was, it was either outside the stadium or outside the airport. I'm not
sure. No, that was outside the stadium because the Jets thing was in the background.
Oh, okay.
And with his luggage waiting on, I guess the guy that picked him up or whatever, some big NYC drivers, whatever happened, I don't know. It was just a wild. I mean, there was a couple scenes involving at stadiums there. And then Dan Snyder tried to kill about 10 people.
Yeah, and Jalen Hurts all the same time. And
Jalen Hurts as the stadium FedEx Field just keeps, as someone said, come to FedEx Field, you could either get hit by a bunch of poop rain or you can fall off into the tunnel.
Yeah, no, that was a wild scene as well. Credit to Jalen Hurts. I mean, Madden needs to pump up his awareness level to, you know, 99, because he would have been taken down. He had a little sidestep shuffle, watched everybody fall about, I mean, that's a good size fall. I don't know, 5 or 10 feet straight to their face, and, you know, lifts them all up, takes a quick picture, and then heads out. But that was a wild scene out of FedEx. But also, too, I mean, he got like 10 or 12 fully grown men leaning up against a rail. It can only hold for so long. But that was hilarious to see, you know, now that everybody's okay and fine. But leave it to Philly fans to make that happen right in front of Jalen Hurts. Like I said, if that lands on him, buddy, we are in for a wild press, press. I don't even know what, just bonanza if that happens. But
how is that not cement, though? Who's the stadium engineer?
Well, those are what do you call it? Like temporary. Like those aren't built into the stadium.
Okay. Yeah. Still. So they're trying to fleece more money out of people to get them closer.
Yeah, 100%. And dump more poop rain on them.
Gotcha. But I was like, how are those just not like cement? Yeah. That doesn't.
Because they can move them in and out.
All right. One last thing. I was in a Browns Twitter space yesterday after the Bengals won. Let me tell you, that was a wild place.
Down bad.
I don't know if they're down bad. Because the whole thing with the Browns is they could even this is the true, you can only blame yourselves with how many games they blew. The Chiefs game, the Chargers game, the Steelers game, the Ravens Sunday night game, the Raiders, and the Packers game. They probably should have won. Those are six games. You go 500 in those, you're 3-3, and you're 10-4 or whatever, and you win the division pretty, or whatever, you're 10-5 going into tonight, and you win the division probably pretty easily. But just the it goes right to who should be the quarterback next year, and throwing out Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins. It's a sad thing to say that Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr lead this team to the division title pretty easily. But just I mean, people, there's some, what they call them, the Sixers. People are calling them the Sixers that are like adamant Baker defenders in there. It's just a mudslinging. It's sports talk radio, whatever, on Twitter with their Twitter personalities. It was quite entertaining. And then I also was like, why am I listening to this? Because this is pretty dumb.
Yeah, there was a thing on Twitter today asking if Washington would trade the 9th overall pick, which is what they have right now. I think that still could change, to the Browns for Baker. Would you do it?
I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Browns, you absolutely do. If Washington does it, I might actually kill myself. So, you know, it's if I don't think anybody's dumb enough in Washington to pull off that move. Baker's not worth a first round pick.
Sam Darnold got a second and a third,
exactly. I mean,
but I'm saying he got a second and a third. Baker's gonna be able to, Browns do end up trading him or whatever, like there's a lot of quarterbacks that could potentially be on the move this year. Like Baker's, you could still, if he got a second and a third Darnold, Baker's, you're going to be able to get that. The guy took a team to the playoffs and won a playoff game.
But now that we see how that Darnold thing, you know, played out, I think GMs might be a little bit more hesitant to take a chance like that.
What's the difference of taking the chance on Darnold and taking a chance on Baker?
I'm saying at a higher price.
But I mean, some people could get stupid when it comes to quarterback.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It also comes down to if you're taking a quarterback, and this goes for any team that's going to be trying to get a new quarterback, would you rather have Baker or would you rather have one of the rookies coming out? And anything like that. Like, I don't think I'm sold on any of the rookies this year. If I'm looking for a quarterback, I would say let's fire up the tanks and get ready for CJ Stroud next year. I've done a total 180 on him. I'm all in on CJ Stroud at the end of this year, and then especially with the Rose Bowl there. But get ready for the class next year because there's some good crops there. I would say get the tanks ready.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just feel like a top 10 pick for Baker would be an extreme overpay and a big, big mistake for not just Washington, but any team. You know, first round pick for Baker, I think, is just too much either way.
I would probably agree with that. All right, to college football. We had the semifinals this weekend, and the expected, the two favorites won. And this is a continuation of what we've seen in the playoff semifinals. They're not very competitive game. I will say I did think the Alabama game was a little bit more competitive than the Georgia game.
Yeah, I would agree.
I never thought that Cincinnati was going to really score a touchdown in that game. So I don't know if that makes it, if I'm pretty stupid for saying that I thought it was more competitive, but the defense definitely held their own. In the passing game, Bama was just like, hey, we're going to run the ball on you all day. And Cincinnati, I think, was pretty content with that. The problem I have with Cincinnati is they just called a conservative game. I don't get what they were doing. I don't get why they didn't air it all out against Bama. I don't know if they thought that wasn't the way they were going to win, but it just seemed like they were very, very conservative. Desmond Ridder had problems throwing the ball over the Bama defensive line. How many passes did he get deflected? It seemed like he was getting a ton of passes deflected. There was just no creativity from the offense. Thought they would pull out all the stops there to try and get it. They did force some turnover. The only turnover of the game on Bryce Young. You're like, all right, maybe they could do something, but just held to a field goal. Look, I don't think Cincinnati has anything really to hold their head on. I thought they competed well. It was 17-6 going into the fourth quarter. It's was still technically in reach. Again, I never thought they were going to score a touchdown, but also I really wasn't impressed with Alabama that much. They just did what they had to do, took care of a Cincinnati team, and now they move on against Georgia. And I do think that the only having Williams and not Mechie, I think that's going to be a huge deal going to the Georgia game, because I thought it was somewhat of a big deal in the Cincinnati game, not having both of them out there. And you saw the pass offense look a little not like it normally was, even though that wasn't really their main efficiency on offense.
Yeah, going back to your first point, I totally agree where it just Cincinnati just was, you know, they had a game plan and they were going to stick to that. And it's kind of what they've been doing all year. And, you know, we've seen time and time again, you want to stick to your identity. You want to stick to things that, you know, what the old saying, run what you brung, you know, dance with who you brought. And you want to stay true to yourself. But when you're as big of an underdog as Cincinnati was against Alabama, you've got to pull out a little bit of tricks. You got to pull out, you know, you got, like you said, you got to just throw everything at them and see what happens. But they just went in there and said, hey, we're going to do what we've been doing this entire time, and really didn't change or stray away from that at all, which, again, like, I can respect and I can get behind, but definitely more if it's an even matched team that you're facing. Whereas with Cincinnati, you know, they had the 15-year anniversary of the Fiesta Bowl with OU Boise State. And, you know, you see the end of that game, and you kind of, not saying that that's what you need is some, you know, crazy trick plays over and over and over again, but you need something to where it changes it up a little bit and you can kind of get a leg up against your competition that is, you know, more superior as far as talent, maybe even physically. You know, the quarterback for Cincinnati was just running for his life all day long, and anytime they snapped the ball, it felt like defense was in his face, and he really wasn't able to get things going. So like you said, maybe it was a little bit more competitive in that Bama Cincinnati game, but it never really felt like Bama was ever in any danger of losing that game or even making it close, you know, close down the stretch, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we talked about this on Thursday leading into the weekend. Cincinnati had to be the first group of five team to go into the playoffs. We'll see if there's another one, you know, and how soon will it be if it does happen, but yeah, they had to be the sacrificial lamb, and I just don't know that they showed enough or had a good enough performance to really warrant another group of five team to be in the power and be in the playoff anytime soon.
Well, I, again, as I said on Thursday, since it, whatever Cincinnati did should not affect group of five teams going forward if they make the playoffs.
It's going to. Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with the human element. That's the problem with the human element. It shouldn't. I agree. Every team should be taken on a case by case situation, but just the human element, it's going to have an effect.
Well, you want it to have an effect because you don't want another group of five school in the playoff.
No, I mean, I'm not rooting one way or the other. I've been saying for quite some time, I don't think a group of five teams belong in the college football playoffs, just because, you know, we kind of saw what happened whenever, and I've said it time and time again, whenever you get two teams, you know, that are two good coach teams, usually the better athletes win. And that's exactly what happened. The better team absolutely won against Alabama, won in this Alabama Cincinnati game.
And I mean, I don't think anybody's surprised that Alabama won.
No, agreed. And they shouldn't be. If you are, you're just kidding yourself and lying to yourself about how good Cincinnati was. But again, when it comes to, just look at the fact, I mean, if you just want to take it very, very, primal and break it down to the very bare bones, you're looking at a roster loaded of 5-star recruits going against a roster of 2- and 3-star recruits. I mean, I know that doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things, but if you just take it down to the bare bones of looking at that, I mean, there's your answer right there. Like I said, it's going to be David versus Goliath every single time.
And 17-6 on the fourth going into the fourth quarter isn't something to be like saying, wow, Cincinnati. And holding Alabama to under 30 points, which only two teams did this year, LSU and Auburn. Every other game they scored in the 40s.
I mean, you can be proud of that, or you can be happy about that, but I don't really think that really has anything to do with much. Like I said, was it a competitive game? In some aspects, sure, but if you're holding your head on small victories like that, that goes to prove right then and there that no group of five team should be in the college football playoffs.
Well, no, but I'm just saying to your point, it's that, or not to your point, but the opposite side. If you could say, look at them, they played them tough. All these games are blowouts anyway, so why not give these teams a chance if they're blowouts anyways? When we saw
that part right there is a very viable argument. Like, these are going to be blowouts regardless.
But look at Michigan. Loved Michigan. 100%. Loved Michigan. Couldn't understand how they were 7-point dogs against Georgia. They embarrassed themselves.
They got their shorts blown off. 100%.
Like typical Michigan. That was a typical Michigan performance. They went at home in the snow against Ohio State and beat a bad Iowa team. Everybody talks about how great they are for the next month, and they get embarrassed. And that game was over in the first quarter. Michigan had no chance after that, and they got embarrassed. Honestly, I'd be more happy if I was a Cincinnati fan than I was a Michigan fan in that performance on Saturday. I could leave with my head held high if I'm Cincinnati. If I'm Michigan, I'm thinking, damn, that sucked. That's a typical Michigan. Now you're going to say, oh, we beat Ohio State. We're back. Michigan's not back. Michigan's not back. They got embarrassed out there. And again, Georgia wasn't as bad as everybody saw them in the Alabama game. Like, that was an overreaction to how poorly in the second half, or really the second quarter, was against Alabama. Georgia was still always really, really good. And people got it misconstrued, partly me, because I thought it was going to be a little bit closer. But Georgia's still a damn good football team.
No, agreed. Stetson Bennett played much, much better. I mean, I think that was probably the biggest story of the game, was how well he played. You know, 21 of 31, he had over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now, I don't know if that's Michigan's just poor play all around on both sides of the ball or what. So, him having a big game is going to be, that's just like an added bonus for Georgia when he's, lighting things up like that. But like I said, to your point, if all these games are blowouts anyway, and I think this year was a little bit different because with Cincinnati, because you really couldn't make an argument for anybody else to be in that fourth spot. So if it comes down to it like that, then yeah, give the group of five guy a shot. If they get their doors blown off, then so be it. Everybody else seems to be getting their doors blown off in these games regardless. I think a little bit of your Ohio State bias might be creeping in when you go on that Michigan rant and saying that they absolutely got their doors blown off. They got their, they did get embarrassed. I just think some of your bias creeped in a little bit there, which is totally fair and totally fine. That's why the argument for expanding the playoffs, I think, to me, is just stupid, especially the 8 teams. Because, you see Alabama go up against the number 8 team, or you see Georgia go up against the number 7 team. Like, what are we doing? Like, that's just prolonging the inevitable of the top 2 teams probably playing in the final again. And, instead having to take a longer road to go there versus just getting it cut and dry pretty easy.
No, I agree. Look, every Ohio State fan is going to go clown Michigan from this past week. But
and rightfully so. 100%
what was the strength of the Michigan team? The defense.
Running the ball. Yeah, and then the defense for sure. Yeah,
defense and running the ball. Yeah. And they gave up 27 points in the first half.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
And in the first quarter, Georgia marched down with ease when you're supposed to have your game plan ready to go and everything. I tweeted it out right when I saw Harbaugh in those blue pants. I knew it was game over.
Yeah. What was he doing with that? I mean, Harbaugh, I don't know. You're literally the khakis guy. What are we doing?
I don't know. The one guy I was watching the beginning of the game with, he was like, who do you like, Georgia or Michigan? And I was on the fence and he goes, I think I'm going to take Michigan. I'm like, all right, I don't hate it. And then I said, and then we saw Harbaugh on the screen in the blue pants. I was like, hey, can you change your bet right now? I got to figure it out. But I was like, I'd get on Georgia in those blue pants. You cannot get out with go without the tried and true there. That was a big mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. That's 100%. Everybody should be mad at Harbaugh, not for how the team was prepared or how the team performed, but for the fact that he went away from everything we know about Harbaugh and it's wearing the khakis, and that was just wild move there.
Well, and look, Georgia's got a great rush defense, and they shut down what Michigan needed to do well. What did Michigan do well all season? They ran the ball great. And how'd they beat Ohio State? Because they ran the ball, and Ohio State couldn't stop the run against anybody. And they stopped the run, and their quarterbacks weren't able to make any plays. And that was that. And I know people are surprised the line for the national championship game, Alabama plus three. I'm in the minority again. Look, I think Georgia has a really good chance. I think Georgia's still really good. And again, I think John Metchie being out is a huge loss for Alabama. And we'll have to see. And you got to think that there's going to be some bounce back. I know I keep saying this, but Georgia was up 10-0 in the first quarter against Alabama and then just let it snowball effect in the second quarter. And they couldn't come back It wasn't like they got blown out from beginning to end. They had chances too in the second half. They just couldn't convert on those. It was just a snowball effect in the second quarter that caused them to lose the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know where I'm going to land on this. I'm going to ride with Bama till the wheels fall off. I've been doing it this long. It wouldn't make any sense for me to jump off now. But I agree with you. Metchie being out is going to be huge. I know Jameson Williams was a little banged up there at the end of the game as well. So we'll see what his status is. But luckily, they have a week to prepare for that. Honestly, I think if Bijan Robinson keeps running the way he is, I don't know how much they really need those guys. Obviously, they still need those guys. Don't get me wrong. They still, you need your top wide receivers. Obviously, they're not going to have Mitchie, but you still need Williams out there doing his thing. But Bijan Robinson he looks.
Brian.
Bijan is the Texas guy. Yeah, Bijan's a Texas guy. Brian Robinson just absolutely, crushing it as of late. And I think if he can keep running the ball like that, he'll Bama's going to be in a good spot.
Yeah, but I do think a lot of that, though, was Saban saying, like, hey, look, Cincinnati really does have a good secondary, so maybe let's just focus on the run. We're going to be able to win in the trenches and just wear them down in the run, and then when we have to pass. So that was the game plan there. I don't know I assume the game plan will be a little bit different against Georgia. But, all right, a couple other things in college football from the weekend. I think we need to stand up, Ryan. Give a big round of applause for Matt Corral, a man who truly loves the game of football so much that he was going to play in the bowl game no matter what. And he just loves it. He loves the game of football more than Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Kenny Pickett, Carson Strong. Who are some other guys that opted out?
The list goes on and on.
All those guys other than opted out. And we're going to tell you on the broadcast how much he loves football, how much we hope he's okay, and how glad we are that he was playing tonight in this game and that he didn't care about it. The hand-wringing for him on Saturday to play. And look, Matt Corral wanted to play in the game, he could play in the game. I'm not going to fault him for playing in the game. But if these guys want to opt out, fine, go opt out. And then you got to listen to, you know what I said? So when we were talking, I don't know when this was, a month ago, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, I said, when I was talking about English soccer, like in England, they have two main, like two of the guys that played, one guy played for Liverpool, one guy played for Man United, Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher. They're like the voices, the top two pundits out there. They have other guys come in, but those are like the top two pundits that everybody listens to for takes. The top college football guy analyst is Kurt Herbstreit. I don't think there's any denying that.
Correct.
He is the voice of college football.
Brady Quinn might be a close second, but that's about it.
Yes, Brady Quinn might be a close second, but Kurt Herbstreit is the voice of college football. And for him to, and I think a lot of people agree with what he's saying that aren't on Twitter. The tone has shifted on Twitter, but a lot of people say they're hearing his things on whatever the clip is. If they're on Facebook, they watch College Game Day. I think a lot of people agree with Kurt Herbstreit and what he said about saying that kids don't love the game of football now, at least college wise, like we do. And they're doing all this stuff. And then Desmond Howard, look, I think he's a fraud. Desmond Howard is a fraud of the highest order. He's just he's just riding coattails from Michigan and hey, we want Ohio State and Michigan banter on the set. If anybody even cares about that, he's just the biggest spare ever and saying they don't love it like us. But for those guys to be tone deaf, and then it's a problem for ESPN. They don't have someone who has another point of view on the whole situation on there to maybe have a casual debate about the topic. Which could actually would make for really, really good TV. Instead, you have Herbstreit then trying to walk back what he's saying on Twitter, which he doesn't really even walk back on. It's a bad look for Herbstreit. We're both Herbstreit fans. I'm a big Herbstreit guy. I think he's still pretty good. But just to be so, I guess, tone deaf or miss the point on this, or maybe you misconstrue your words on it, just disappointing and a bad take for what he said.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think, like you said, if Matt Corral wanted to play, then friggin' play. If you want to opt out and go start getting ready for the draft, that's exactly what you should do. Whatever he feels right for you in your career, do it. And obviously we see Matt Corral get banged up, comes out today. He just had a sprained ankle, so it wasn't as bad as everyone initially feared. Shouldn't it affect his draft status by any means. But I think as soon as that happened, you see that it's just a sprained ankle. Matt Corral's probably like, yeah, no, I'm good. Shout out Colt McCoy in the Alabama national championship where his shoulder gets a little banged up and he says, you know what? I'm good. And I'm going to get ready for the draft. I agree. One guy that I'm kind of bouncing back and forth on. I can't figure out if I like him or if I don't, as far as a college football analyst and an in-game analyst as well. Play-by-play guy is RG3. Cause he kind of has the newer outlook on things. He's got a feel for things. He's active on Twitter, so he's kind of got a feel of things that's go on in the social media world, which I think Herbstreit has a very good grasp on as well. So if
he reads his mentions all the time,
Herbstreit.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. No, I mean, that's what I mean. He has a good grasp of what's going on Twitter as well, which sometimes we use Twitter, I think, a little bit too much. But also, that's where people are able to sound off and give their bad takes all the time, 24/7 around the clock. So, if that, like you said, if they wanted to have a little bit of an open conversation there, maybe even have a conversation or I don't know if any guys would do this, but kind of have an open forum type of discussion, not a first take like thing, but where everyone's just kind of having civilized conversation with guys that opted out, guys that recently opted out, that are in the NFL now. Go talk to Jamar Chase, go talk to Penei Sewell, see how it worked out for them. They opted out of full seasons, not just bowl games. And then go talk to guys that are opting out of bowl games, to go get ready for the playoff, or get ready for the draft and see where their mind's at. And I think that'd be a great thing to kind of get everybody on the same page and kind of see, what everyone's kind of thinking.
Yeah. Look, the first time a player opts out of the playoff, then you have a conversation on opt-outs.
100%.
But no one's going to opt out in the playoff. So say Jordan Davis, the stud defensive tackle for Georgia, just says, you know what? I'm done. I'm not playing the championship game. Then we can bring in the conversation of what's going on. And people are like, well, so you're only playing for a championship? Only really three games matter? Yes, ESPN tells 100%. You. ESPN promotes college football, probably not as much as they should, but they spend time. They talk about one thing the entire year of college football. That's who's in. Who's in the playoff? They run the ads. Who's in? They care about three games of college football all year, the two playoff semifinals and the national championship game. And that
And they have a full broadcast for 8 weeks on just announcing who the top four is.
Yes. Yes. They do have that. That's the only thing they promote. So, and then the whole, this goes into the whole, are there too many bowl games? Are there too many? First of all, there's not too many bowl games. They get 1.5 to 2 million in the middle of the week. Okay. Like people are watching those in the middle of the week, and ESPN owns all of those and runs all of those. They don't have any other programming they're going to run that's going to get one in the 1 million to 2 million views for the lower level bowl games. Two bowl games this year didn't hit a million views. And that was the first one. That was a Friday afternoon or a Friday morning that started like 11 a.m. on December 11th, I think, or whatever it was, 16th. And then the other one was a Monday morning at 11 a.m. before in the afternoon of a Monday night football game. Those are two terrible time slots, and those still got 850,000 and 960,000. So it's getting close to a million views, even the two lowest ones. So why, if you're a player, would you risk yourself to play in a meaningless exhibition game in a bowl game? And yeah, look, Chris Olave for Ohio State, he went out there and still enjoyed the trip. He just didn't play. Maybe more guys do that instead of just not even going to the trip. But they could do what they want to do. And I was listening to the Levitard show today. Really, what other bowl game in the middle of these bowl games, in the middle of the halftime of the Fiesta Bowl, in the middle of halftime of the Citrus Bowl, of the Outback Bowl, they barely even talk about what they saw in the game. They maybe spend 2 minutes on it. You know what they do for the last 25 minutes? Get you ready for the national championship game. Why don't you act like this game's kind of a big deal if you're paying for it? The only other bowl game they care about is the Rose Bowl. They make that feel like a big deal because it's the granddaddy of them all. It is. What I think is the best bowl game. I've said it before. I think it's great with the setting and the grass and everything. It's just a great game. But other than that, they don't make any other bowl games feel like special in the moment at all. They care about three games all year about that. And that's it. And also the bigger thing with Herb Street is his companies, who he works for, they're paying all this money. The players get none of it. He's getting a huge contract. I know it's been said a lot, but why don't we ask Desmond Howard and Herb Street? Would he, for the love of the game, would he have called the national championship game or called the semifinal on Friday night, took a plane in the middle of the night from Miami to L.A., woke up at 7 a.m. when he got in at like 4 a.m., do game day, and then call the Rose Bowl? Would he do that for free? Would he do all his travel schedule for free? I don't know. I think we need to ask that question to Herb Street.
Very fair. Very fair. That last point there. I agree.
It's just a bigger problem how like ESPN presents the product when it comes to college football, yeah, is what I think. And then their, I guess, mouthpieces, analysts going along that. But also, I had to mute the broadcast on the Sugar Bowl. I like Joe Tessitore. I don't really care about Greg McElroy. But just the constantness of Matt Corral and everything was just, like, so over the top. It was ridiculous to me.
Yeah, kind of like your point that you made. It's just the mouthpieces that continue to push the narrative.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else we want to touch on here?
I think that was it.
All right. That is it. We'll be back on Thursday with some picks. How'd your picks do in the NFL? 2-2. I'm 2-2 right now, and I have the Steelers tonight. And college, I have to go. I was 1-1-1 on New Year's Day. I know that.
I'm 3-1 right now in the NFL. I don't think I mentioned on Thursday, I went 5-0 last week. So we're on a nice little run. I got the Browns tonight. So we'll see how that goes.
I think the Browns are going to play hard. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
We'll have to see. Hopefully, they play hard and bench everybody so they lose next week. Shout out to Notre Dame too. 0-10 in BCS New Year's Six games.
Love it.
So, but then they say they cancel the narrative. But all right, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll be back on Thursday. So have a good middle of the week.